Warning, the following content occasionally contains adult themes and language, which is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cinematic Rewind. Joining me today to talk about the 1995 film Jumanji is Munster.
Hey, what's up, podcast world?
And Region.
What year is it?
Not 1995, that's for damn sure. All right. Like I said, we are talking about the 1999 Jumanji, and that has a 7 out of 10 on IMDb, a 52 on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 39 out of Metacritic. These scores surprise me, and I know I say that with a lot of films, but I always thought that this film would have higher reviews. You know, it's kind of talked about a lot from the nostalgia factor, so I don't know why it has such low scores. Was this not well received in the 90s?
I know from my history with the film, it wasn't talked about a lot until kind of more in syndication from my memory of it, because we saw it in the theaters, and I do have a history with film in that aspect. But from a commercial standpoint, I think it kind of just did its run and it was done. And I also feel like some of those reviews are retrospect, because I don't think they had much reviews back then other than the typical like Siskel and Ebert. But the ones that you're seeing online, I think that's people who went back to watch it and probably judged it more harshly. That would be my immediate opinion on that.
It has to be, because like Rotten Tomatoes and a lot of these sites came out way later. So it's definitely people going back, watching it, and then giving it bad scores. But I thoroughly enjoyed this film, so I'm not sure why people hate on it.
Regent, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say financially, it made 4 times its money back in the box office in contrast to its budget. So when it came out, it was number one in the box office and made $100 million stateside and then $162 overseas. So it made about $265 million overall.
So it did pretty well.
Yeah, but commercially successful, exactly like what Regent's talking about, is that commercially successful doesn't necessarily equate to critics looking at every piece of the movie, things like character development, storyline, plot, because I'm a big fan of like the Fast and Furious franchise, and I know those movies, their plots suck. And I know there's a plenty of flaws, but they are so fun to watch. And they're usually in the top 10 to top 20 highest grossing films of all time.
True, true.
Well, the biggest thing is that, at least doing some quick research, it's mostly the review websites that are panning the movie. But there's a couple who actually polled audiences, and the audiences were giving anywhere from a B to an A minus as an average. So I really want to believe that the review scores is coming from the mindset of whomever that was doing the reviews, including Roger Ebert, gave it a 1.5 out of 4 stars. I think they're just not a fan of the movie because of, like we've talked about before, you know, off recording, some movies, because this came from a book, there may have been that expectation of book the source material or to the film, and they deviate away from it a little bit. And then some of the practical effects or the reliance of it is Roger Ebert's gripe about it. But I just feel that the audiences may have enjoyed the movie, but the people who are trying to spread the word of the quality of it were just against it because they were so focused on the word quality over entertainment.
I can agree with that.
And it does look like user scores are much higher than critic scores. Critics put it in the 30s to 40s, while users are putting it in 60s to 70s. So I can absolutely see that, to where people going to see the film are like, yeah, it's pretty good. But critics are like, it's not so great.
And I'm over here thinking the film's amazing. But it might have a lot to do with nostalgia. I have a great history with the film. I've watched it many, many times.
I have always said 80s and 90s films are mostly good for nostalgia purposes, especially when in comparison to more recent releases. But that's just my personal opinion. But I do want to talk about this film. This is actually one of the first films I had ever seen with Robin Williams not doing an animated voice, to where he is just live action, not a voiceover.
Oh, that's crazy because growing up, I had 50-50, and then after the 90s, it was all live action for me, and maybe that's all he did work on. I know I've watched over half his filmography, and I always enjoyed it, and I don't know if people such as yourself missed out in the 90s seeing him, I think, kind of more in his prime at that time, because I feel like we got to see him be as creative as possible. I think he was still good later on after the 2000s, but I feel like some of his work kind of changed into a different direction. I feel like 90s was just prime real estate for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat as Monsta. I grew up with 50-50 of him live acting versus voice character work, voice animation, and even more importantly, for what I remember him for was stand-up comedy, because stand-up comedy was like his huge break into voice acting and live action, because he did a lot of impersonations, really off-the-cuff humor and very bombastic humor, where it's just like you couldn't believe that it was coming out of his mouth and you would just start laughing. But that was kind of like his whole thing, his entire career. He can go from being this crazy, like unpredictable comedian on stage to a heartwarming person on film to later in his career in the 2000s to playing some very vile and despicable villains in TV shows. He was just such a good, broad actor that he could play anything you could tell him and he could knock it out of the park. Like, that's just how talented he was. At least in my eyes, he's a one in a million type of actor and performer.
Yeah, he has always been a phenomenal performer, as from everything that I have seen him do, from his comedy skits to his voiceovers for animated films to his live action films, which I'm starting to catch up on his filmography and basically just go through and watch everything I can of him. I have seen him just do so many things that I have thoroughly enjoyed. I'd say one of my favorite films from him so far is Good Will Hunting.
It's a pretty good film. I think I got so many films. It's really hard for me to pick one. Jumanji was actually my first introduction to him, or either Aladdin. I can't remember the timing of both films, especially by the time I watched them, because I saw Aladdin on VHS tape at school. But after that, I saw pretty much everything he put out every year. I think, once again, because of nostalgia, Jumanji is my favorite of his film. But I will commend him. He has so many great films, though. So that's super high up there. And there's a lot of films up there right behind it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, when it comes to me from Williams, I think I'm earlier than both of you. Like, I, even though I'm the late 80s and grew up in the 90s, like, the first movie I remember seeing him in, at least watching with my family, was Good Morning Vietnam, Cadillac Man, Dead Poets Society. Those were, and then Hook. Like, I think the movie that made me fall in love with him as a actor and a performer was Hook. Aladdin reinforced it. Hook was definitely, oh, he can get my intention, my emotions, and really pull on my heartstrings to sympathize and support a character. But then the next closest to that would be is Patch Adams, because it's a genuinely funny movie and also a genuinely sad movie. From a serious acting movie, it'd be Patch Adams, Good Will Hunting, or even Kenneth Branagh's version of Hamlet, which is literally the book from Hamlet, cover to cover, word for word.
Yeah, and I do want to update for me. I had to quickly check. Aladdin was the first introduction because that was 92, but I actually did see Doubtfire, Mrs. Doubtfire. I forgot that was 93.
And Mrs. Doubtfire, yeah.
Yeah, so those are the back-to-back. And I think because of that, I was more excited to watch Jumanji, even though I was kind of nervous at first because a lot of the stuff in the trailers kind of scared me a little bit. But thankfully, my dad wanted to watch it, so we ended up watching it because we loved Robin Williams. But just one more thing. The movie that I would say kind of outside of the most common ones that everyone talks about that I really loved was What Dreams May Come. When I was in college, a friend introduced me to that film, and geez, that hit me deep. I had already saw Robin Williams do a couple serious films. I mean, we can go down the list. I remember something like Bicentennial Man was another one, and a couple other great hits. So it's not that I didn't see him in any serious performance, but I think that just hit me more emotionally than a lot of the other ones. And it was just such a deep film.
I will say an underrated comedy movie of his for either of you. I'm pretty sure Munster's watched it at least maybe once, and I'm going to find out here. The Birdcage with Robin Williams and Nathan Lane.
Oh yeah, definitely watch that.
Fantastic comedy movie for him.
Definitely give him that.
So it seems like we all have like a common theme in Aladdin being one of our first introductions to Robin Williams' work, because that was my very first introduction to him, was the first Aladdin film.
Yeah, and just like, you know, as we talk about the film, it really showed his skill in acting, being able to portray so many different things. Because in the film, I feel like you kind of get a piece of all the stuff that we just talked about, all the different films he does, because you get to see the excited emotions, you get to see the softer side. And one of the most amazing things he does in his film that I really like, especially when I go back to watch it, he nails it being like a teenager in an adult's body. Because when he comes back, so much of what he is, he just has that. Like, it's very sold that he is still that boy that was in the beginning of the film throughout the rest of the film. And he just nails it. And he does it so good. Lots of times I forget that, like, wait, like, this is actually a grown man. But he does such a great job of portraying that he still has that youthfulness and that innocence that the child in the beginning of the film had.
And I think the thing about this movie really, really stands out with his performance is how quickly he goes from being that innocent child that you're talking about to a very graded old man who the only real role model he had for what a man is supposed to be in his eyes was his father, who was a bit rough around the edges. And then you see him go from being that innocent child to that rough type of man to then being a more gentle individual through the kids and through Sarah coming back into his life and trying to get him back to that place to where he was originally, to being more kind and to being more gentle as a person. So it was really cool to see him do all those different phases inside of one movie, and it still felt super realistic, but it wasn't something they hyper-focused on either.
Oh yeah, it felt so natural. I think it's something you appreciate on a rewatch. I know sometimes in life, especially like in businesses and careers and so forth, I kind of make this joke about when everything goes right, you don't notice it. It's only when things go wrong, and that's when you notice it. And I feel like that's how this is. He does such a good job. You're sold throughout the entire film, and you're like, oh wow, I like it. But if he did a crappy job with it, I mean, the film would just not work.
It definitely wouldn't work without his performance here. And I think the biggest sell for this film is Robin Williams. And yes, you have people who now, you look back at the film, people might want to go and watch it because of other actors and actresses inside this film. But really, at the time, Robin Williams was the sell.
No doubt. I remember growing up, he was all in the commercials. It was him, but also the whole fantasy idea of the animals. And I know Regent definitely remembers. You remember all that push about the CG of the animals, like crushing the cars and going through the town? Like, those are the two biggest things. It was like supposed to be like a roller coaster of a ride of a film and starring Robin Williams. Like, that was their two biggest pieces to try to get kids to watch and then adults interested because it was Robin Williams.
One of the things I definitely wanted to touch on was the whole board game aspect, because a film came out not too long after this with a very similar idea. And I don't know if you guys have seen it, Zathura.
Well, it's a pseudo sequel, as they call it, if that's the proper term.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it. I liked it. It was a bit cheesy, but I think it was a great family film.
Oh, yeah. It definitely was a bit cheesy, but I thoroughly enjoyed that film. It was one of my favorite films growing up. I am interested to see if there are any other, like, board game-based films outside of these two. I think I've heard of, like, Twister being a thing.
No, I don't think that's a thing. But Clue, I mean, that was a fun... that was an amazing movie, which we need to do some point.
Yeah, we can talk to you about the legacy that is Tim Curry.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that they made a Clue film. Yeah, we definitely will have to talk about that.
Battleship. I'm laughing because it was horrible.
That was a horrible board game movie.
And didn't they do like a Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie more recently with Hugh Jackman?
You mean Real Steel? That's different.
It was inspired by it, but it's not the same.
Right. It's not the same, but it's like a board game-esque film.
Yeah, if you were going to make a movie about it, I think Real Steel is the closest you're going to possibly get to them making a real movie of that. But yeah, I think here's the thing. At one point, because of Transformers, it was more like the Hasbro brand. In the past decade and a half, they were almost on that fix of, all right, start going through all our products and our board games and start making movies. But it was Battleship, ironically saying this, that sinked it, that they just was like, oh my gosh, we spent all this money and we did not recoup none of it back. That just pretty much stopped that whole train of bringing more board games to life.
I mean, yeah, I think our Ouija board had a movie, but it was a horror movie.
Oh, that was a crappy horror movie.
Yeah, it was horror. Dungeons and Dragons had a movie in 2000.
That was a crappy movie too.
Uh-huh. I mean, there are definitely movies out there based on board games.
Here's where the challenge is. You can't really make a movie based on the board game. It's almost like it has to be kind of like maybe the base to the film. Like Jumanji is unique for that. Jumanji at the core is the movie. It's all about that. And I know we can kind of conversate on like, oh yeah, but it's the characters that's playing it. But at the core, Jumanji's from the very beginning to the very end. And they're following all the rules going by it. And I love the film because I think it's genius how they did it, because we're learning the game with them. We have the same fears that they have because they're learning too. They're like, we don't know what's going to happen next. I say all this because it's really hard to have all that kind of stuff with other board games. You're essentially making a movie where you're taking the storyline from a board game, and that's it. Jumanji's unique where it actually is the board game being played on screen, and it's actually interesting.
Well, it's funny because this movie / board game was also derived from a picture book. The same author who wrote Jumanji also wrote The Polar Express. Jumanji was actually written in a response of frustration to the game Monopoly.
Wow, never knew that.
Yeah, Monopoly, the game that ruins friendship and family. Brought to you, Jumanji.
Yep.
So instead of ruining friendships, we just kill you with safari animals.
Disappear for a couple decades and hope for the best.
Essentially. I think the key factor here between the two more successful board game movies is Zathura and Jumanji are made up board game. They don't exist.
Good point.
And the other ones do exist. So when you have a made up board game, you can make the rules according to your film versus a pre-established board game. You have to make a film fit the board game.
That's a very good point, because I've not played the real Jumanji that was inspired from the movie. But the reason why I didn't is because I know it can't be entertaining. No one talks about having fun playing it. It's not really like it's a popular game. And especially how much they reprint board games at this point. I think if it was a really fun board game, it would be more popular. So because of that, I've not played it. So I am speaking it from an outside standpoint. But I feel confident that it's probably boring to. And I think that proves your point spot on.
Oh man, you mean you haven't played the New York Times best-selling Jumanji board game? Not like that's a thing.
So 10 copies its first day.
God damn. But no. Yeah, it's funny how that works out. It's like the made-up one is the one that's way more successful than the other ones. But I also think when they made this film, they weren't just looking for like a cash grab. They actually had an interesting story that they wanted to tell and some cool concepts. And then anything after that is, oh, we have this IP already. Turn it into more money, please.
Yeah, because there was supposed to be a sequel. I remember it tanked, and I know one of the biggest things was Robin Williams wasn't too happy with the script, but I think that was further down the line. That was his issue with it.
Didn't Robin Williams also have a thing for not wanting to do sequels?
It changed with Night at the Museum, and I think Ben Stiller probably had a part in that.
See, I do remember him being in the second Night in the Museum. Those are pretty good films, too.
Oh, yeah, he's in all three. He's pretty much in the first movie. You can kind of call him a supporting cast, but because he did so well, which I loved him in the film, in number two and number three, he pretty much was one of the lead actors. They bumped him up.
It's always like sad to go back and watch a Robin Williams film, you know, with his passing and all, because it's like he could have done so much more with his life. Not saying he didn't do enough, but like if he had lived, he could have done more work. So it's always just like a bittersweet thing to like go back and watch his films.
Oh, yeah. I sometimes definitely get the fuzzies thinking about his daughter, Zelda, because I know she's been a little bit out more in the public. Pretty much everything good that I've seen, you can tell she appreciates everybody. She knows everyone loves her dad. She's going to love him more than anybody else because she definitely has seen more things than we will ever have seen or known about him. And it's just a beautiful thing to see where even someone like him, you know, his daughter has so much love for him this many years later. And she, whatever she does, you can tell she wants to honor his name and continue the legacy in her own way and still respect her father.
It's definitely a good thing to see. I've never seen a single person online ever have a bad thing to say about Robin Williams or his performances or his comedy ever.
Yeah, I was going to say a sarcastic remark, but I'll go ahead and say it on the podcast. I was about to say is that, well, if he made it to 2022, who knows, you know? I feel like people come out the woodworks with stuff. And I say this because this is no disrespect to him. It's a little bit of a dig to society. Robin Williams did say some harsh stuff back in the 80s and 90s.
It got worse in the 2000s.
Exactly. And it kind of shows how different time periods look at different things. So unlike Regent, it was the flip-flop for me. I didn't know Robin Williams did stand-up comedy, which was funny because I watched a ton of stand-up comedy growing up, and still to this day I do. And once I went to college, someone told me that. They were like, yeah, look it up on YouTube. And I looked it up on YouTube and just went down the rabbit hole. And every few years, I go down the rabbit hole and watch his stand-up, and I love it every single time. But yeah, when you see and hear some of his jokes, I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I hate to say it. In today's society, I think some people would have a problem with it. But he was such a great person that I think even during that time, we understood he had such a kind heart. No one took it personal.
Right. And I think that's the difference between Robin Williams and a lot of comedians today, is that people genuinely saw Robin Williams as a kind and caring individual who had no ill intent towards anyone. Pretty much every single one of his roles, he played someone who was kind. Might have been someone rough around the edges, but deep down, he played a kind person off screen. I've never heard a bad thing said about him by another castmate or crew member. So everyone knew him from his reputation, that he was good, versus some comedians today, you know, they put something out there that they're against whatever, because everyone has to put their political, non-political beliefs out there for everyone to see. And so people already go into their comedy with this idea of like, well, they're against this, so I'm already going to be on edge.
You're definitely right. And growing up, he wasn't in the tabloids. You didn't hear any of the drama. And he had such a kind presence on and off film that, yeah, like whenever I saw things, even when he did interviews and so forth, or even his stand-up comedy, even if he said something that someone might have been offended by, he was so, I guess like even his lead up was just to make you laugh. And it wasn't to tear you apart. It was more like a, you know, like when you're at a party and someone just makes a quick something funny just to make a laugh in the moment. It's not meant to, you know, hurt you deep or something you got to think of later. It's literally just there to make you laugh. And sometimes his comedy would be stuff that you wouldn't think of, which would make it even better.
I think he understood that too, is the important part was to never make a dig at anyone or anything unless he felt super strongly about it. He just did stuff to make people laugh. And I think that's why every single person who has seen his works, either growing up or going back to watch it, has such fond memories of him. I think he understood the importance of not taking digs at people and just making jokes for people to laugh at. So that's always a good thing to keep in mind. One of the things I did want to talk about this film, or specifically ask you guys, is like, what are some of your favorite scenes from the movie? I'll let you do two favorite scenes and then like one scene that you always remember no matter what, like one scene that just stands out above them all. Throw that to you first, Regent.
My two favorites would have to be when they're playing in the attic and the line is between the boxes rumbling and they look at a pure fear as the floor is moving, like shaking, and then the lion's teeth and mouth open and begins to roar. The second favorite would be the department store with the gunfighting and all the different things flying around and how Van Pelt lands on the canoe and they drop the oxygen tanks to shoot him out of the store and he just lets out a high-pitched wail as he flies out through the store. The one that I always will remember is when they are, I think it's when they're trying to get back to the house and they find Peter, but they realize Peter is cheating. That was always my favorite scene because it was a great reminder of people who cheat in games and anything else. Karma will catch up to them or punishment will be involved at some point for their actions.
Pretty legit.
What about you, Munster?
Well, one of them that I really like is pretty much any scene with David Alan Greer. I grew up watching his comedy and especially his show he was in, Living Color. And my family, we love his stuff. And who knows, maybe that was part of the reason why we watched the movie too, with him being in there. He always have had this distinctive yell and he does it in the movie. And I don't want to mimic it on the podcast to ruin people's ears, but I love it. If you see the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about, especially early on where he's in the cop car and he's kind of doing some quick investigation. And he starts seeing all the freakish stuff starting to happen. So that's one of them. Another one of my favorite scenes, another early on one, is the scene where Alan shows up after they roll the dice and he shows up to save them from the lion. I love that because it always stood out to me, the whole sequence, because it's when Robin Williams shows up in character, but it was just so heroic what he did. He saved the kids. He also took out such a big enemy, and it was already kind of fearful. It was like, oh gosh, is this thing going to kill one of the kids or hurt one of them? And I just always thought it was a dope scene of him coming in and saving the day. And then even the whole part where he then cleans up and shaves, and then he has like all the marks because he's like, look, my dad taught me how to shave decades ago, and I haven't had a chance to really do it. I just always felt that was really funny, especially when I was a kid because I didn't shave yet either. So I was like, oh, is this what's going to happen when I shave? Am I going to have all these marks on my face too? So I always thought it was funny. A scene that I will always remember, I will definitely say it is the final battle, the last 2 to 3 rolls on the board when the Machin separates. And it's the monsoon, everything. I love how action-packed it is. This movie has a lot of good balance from action, adventure, storytelling. I wouldn't say it's a lot of drama, but it has just enough to entertain you. And that sequence, to me, it's one of the reasons why I love adventure films. I always love seeing how people who I could kind of relate to do these kind of amazing things, and it's just kind of always fun to see that. So I just liked how the kids were able to do stuff. I think Bonnie Hunt, her character, so Sarah and Alan doing all that kind of stuff, helping each other out. And you see their bond and their friendship. And it was just a really cool sequence. And I always loved all the danger that they were in. And of course, when Homeboy shoots the bullet and it starts coming back, that is just one of the dopest scenes in the film that I love.
A funny bit that I forgot to touch on was, so speaking of David Alan Grier, when they're in the police car driving, it's him and Alan, and Alan is trying to apologize to him for the last 26 years because of Carl's life spiraling because of Alan. He's like, look, I don't know, this doesn't mean much after so long, but I'm sorry. And Carl's like, for what? It's me, Alan. And you just hear the brakes just, and the car just hard stop, and the realization of, oh crap, this is Alan. Because in the beginning parts of the movie, I believe Carl was making a new shoe for the shoe company that he thought was going to help the company take off. Kind of like the first Jordans for Nikes almost, or Air Force Ones. But because what happened with Alan and Carl was supposed to look after him, his whole career got shifted into being a police officer.
So you guys kind of touched on two of my favorite scenes, and one involves the whole shoe thing. And I really like the game's finally over and you go back to the time when Alan is a kid and he had learned all of his lessons throughout the film. And he goes to his dad and he actually says, hey, I'm actually the one who put the shoe on there. Bentley didn't do it, which is David Alan Grier's character's name. And his father's like, well, thank you for telling me. I just think it's like a really good moment to like wrap up Alan's story of like being willing to deal with his actions and being able to face all the consequences of his actions. It's just a really good wrap up for his character, and I really enjoyed that moment. One other moment is going to be like the monkey tail, and where he is learning these lessons that I just talked about, and when he's like talking to Peter about, hey, cheating and all these different things, and you just get to see that shift of like he's trying to be that man that his father displayed, and he realized that that isn't going to work for him, that isn't going to work on Peter, and that's not a good figure for him to be. That's not the person he wants to be. So he does this whole shift of like actually helping Peter and getting him to be more comfortable. It's a comical moment in some aspects, and other aspects it's like a nice moment for Alan's character to sort of take that next step and be better than who his father was. And I would say one moment I always remember is, again, another scene that Munsta touched on, is like the whole bullet going back into the gun. But it's really the quote that Alan says right before he fires the bullet, and Van Pelt is like, aren't you afraid? And Robin Williams just replies, I'm terrified, but my father always says you should face your fears. It's just, there's always a good quote from Robin Williams in every single film that he does that sticks with you outside of the film. And that is just such a good line about facing your fears and just being able to take it. And that doesn't mean you have to like lie there and just take it, but you just have to face your fears and deal with them as they come, because they're not really going to go anywhere. So, and then of course you have all of the game being sucked inside the board game, and then they get transported back in time, back to when they initially started the game. So super cool scene, and just a really powerful line that sticks with you outside the film. So those are my three.
I would say that resolution is one of my favorite resolutions in all film that I've seen. Because sometimes movies don't end on a way that I like. But that, it felt like a worthy resolution. If you watch the film, you were really wanting to know how did all this resolve afterwards. You're like, okay, they're back here, but what about the kids and all this and that stuff? And I love that kind of thing, because even though it was resolved, you had questions, and they still answered them in a proper way. They showed Alan's growth, and then they showed what happened to the kids. Like, hey, they actually still they are still born at some point, and if anything, everyone's lives improved from it. And I just love the finale too. It's just such a beautiful ending to the film. I love the way they do it with the final cap, is that they still have the board game and they kind of tease that someone may be picking it up because it's on the beach. I love movies that, if you want to tease a potential future, write it in a way that it can stand alone, and then when a sequel, if it does show up, great. If not, you don't feel like you missed out on things, because I feel like we do that too often nowadays. We'll leave too many plot threads open because the potential sequel. This movie stands on by itself, and it still teases you that like there could always be a potential future.
I would have to agree. I really like the way that they wrap this film up with Alan being back in his natural timeline and how that really positively impacted so many people. And then, of course, you have like the board game washing up on the beach, like you said. I think more movies today focus on leaving something open-ended. And I think this tried to do it, but it did it in a way to where if there wasn't a sequel, no big deal. It was just, hey, it's still out there. And that worked. You don't have to have some huge cliffhanger ending in order to potentially have a sequel down the road. This just said, hey, the board game's still out there. Who knows what will happen?
Yep, and that's why I like it. Just left it. It's still out there. They didn't even show someone picking it up. I remember someone's walking on the beach and they say something and they cut it off from there. So they could have easily not done anything with it, but that's why I love. Like, they just left it like that. I have seen the two sequels down the road that eventually showed up. They're not reboots. I don't really think that's a spoiler alert. You can kind of see in the explanation. They're definitely modern day Jumanji, and I actually think they're both really good. I think they're actually equal to this film for different reasons. I still think the original is the best, but I would say the two movies that they recently had with The Rock and Kevin Hart, that it's like one step below, and I rate this movie very highly, so that's actually giving them good credit. So I do say, if you're a fan of this, I say give those movies a try.
I did want to take a moment to talk about the cast, because I feel like we've only really touched on Robin Williams. Kirsten Dunst, obviously a lot of people are going to know her from Spider-Man and some of her other works, but notoriously Spider-Man trilogy from the early 2000s.
Yeah, I give you that. I mean, she did a lot of smaller films and a few other big ones, but as usual, everyone knows. I'll tell you this. I love this film. I love everybody in this movie. Everybody played their part really well. Even if they didn't have a big part, every piece. I mean, I would even say the people in the background. People running from the animals, the people that was just the regular townsfolk, the people working in the buildings. Everything felt right. And all the characters that were speaking parts, nothing felt wasted in this movie. And I'm with you on that. I know we're going to give Robin Williams a lot of credit, but I have no problem giving credit to the rest of the cast as well, even to the extras. Everyone did really well. Everyone stood out. I mean, I can think of just about everybody seen in the film, because anything that they did added to the story.
Yeah, no one felt overshadowed or anything, especially with a name like Robin Williams in the film. You would think it would overshadow some other people, and it in a way has in our conversation, but in the film itself, no one felt overshadowed, which is really, really well done, especially when you hire a big name like him. I'm unfamiliar with the rest of the cast. I know Robin Williams and Kirsten Dunst, but the rest of them, no clue outside of this film.
So let me chime in real quick. So Peter?
Bradley Pierce.
Yeah, he voiced Chip from Beauty and the Beast, and then he voiced Flounder on the Little Mermaid TV series.
Yeah.
So before he got into Jumanji, he did Beauty and the Beast, so.
Yeah, and there was a few other big names. Bonnie Hutt was actually a decent-sized actress as well, and I don't think she really became a major leading lady at any point, but she actually did have her own TV show, so she was definitely well-respected in Hollywood. I know her, Jonathan Hyde, which was Alan Parrish's dad. I know him. He's been in a ton of movies, so I've seen him. I grew up watching David Alan Greer. A couple of the other people, Alan's mom, she's another actress that I've seen her in so much stuff, but I don't have anything immediate that I could say, like, oh, she was the leading lady, but she's been in a ton of stuff too. I think that's about it. Everyone else, especially when I look on IMDb, everyone else kind of like had average kind of careers even after the film, or they either didn't star in the biggest shows. No insult to anyone in particular, but I definitely didn't recognize anyone for a further career.
And I think that's a good thing. And not the fact that they didn't per se like do huge things, but like, I think in a way we attach success to a person if they've done huge things to where like their household name. But I have enjoyed some of these people's works just from looking at their filmography, either writing or acting credits on IMDb. I've seen them in other things I just didn't recognize as they are today.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Is there anything else that you guys wanted to cover before we wrap it up?
Nope, I'm all good.
I'm all good.
All right. Do you guys want to give our final wrap-ups? I'll throw it to you first, Munsta.
Excellent. This movie, I love it. I know there's going to have a lot of nostalgia to it. Even if I take nostalgia out of it, I think it's a really well-made movie. It's a complete story, beginning to end. You don't need any knowledge prior for anything. You can literally just go in. It's a complete story. And I feel like with all the characters having a purpose, it's not going to be any Academy Award-winning film. It's not going to change your life. But I feel it's pure entertainment for all ages. It's very fun. It's a very fun adventure film. And it's a Robin Williams film, and that alone is just worthy of just watching it from there. So I would say for me, it's a 9 out of 10. I know we didn't talk too much about where the movie could improve, so I'll do that here. The reason why I don't give it a 10 out of 10 is it is kind of the part of, it's not that every film has to be groundbreaking, but I don't feel like this movie didn't really add to the world of cinema. I don't feel like it really did anything new either. I feel like this movie it's a very entertaining film for the time period that you're going to watch it, but I feel like after you watch it, you're like, oh, this is a good film. And then you go on with your life. You're not going to go and brag about the film to other people. That's why it's like a 9 out of 10 for me, is that missing that element. But otherwise, it is a film I recommend everyone to watch at least some point.
And I'm going to have to double down with what Munster said. I give it a 9 out of 10. Didn't do much for movies as a whole to make a game changer. It is a movie to look back fondly when it comes to Robin Williams' filmography and his career and life. Only thing I probably would change is I would flesh out some of the pacing. So that way you gave more time for character development instead of just forcing quick conversations or quick information to make it go, oh, okay, and then on to the next scene with the next information. I think it could have been fleshed a little bit, pulled out a little bit more for a little bit longer of a movie to really tell more of a story and pull you into more of the characters as a whole, but still a great movie. That's why I give it a 9, not a perfect score.
Dude, I do want to interject here. You bring up a good point, and if we just take a few minutes on this, is that the children, now since you bring it up, that is something that every time I watch, I feel like I don't get enough information about the children. They are such a secondary plot, even though they're part of the board game itself, because so much emphasis is on Alan and Sarah. So that part I do agree with, is that every time I rewatch it, I'm like, I learned just a little bit enough where I'm like, man, I kind of wish I could learn more about what happened to their parents and this and that. They just say it, and then that's it. It's just kind of like a quick 30-second explanation, and that's kind of their backstory, and we're done.
Yeah, that would be the negative for me as well. I'd give it an 8 out of 10, and it's because of the exact same reason. It's like, you learn a lot about Sarah, and you learn a lot about Alan and some of the other characters, but when it comes to kids, you learn next to nothing. Judy and Peter get no explanation of their characters besides their main trait. Judy's kind of angsty, and Peter's super shy, and their parents are dead. It's like, okay, they've got to have more personality traits than those two things. So for that reason, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think the character arc for Alan in this film is actually really solid and really well done. For Sarah, getting to see that trauma on her is actually fantastic. Not to say drama's good, but for a character's sake, it was really well portrayed. So that was well done. And the whole time travel aspect kind of worked really well in this film. So thoroughly enjoyed that. Robin Williams' stellar performance. Everyone gave an absolute wonderful performance. The writing just could have been a bit more concise. I will say I am glad for the short runtime. Maybe add like a couple minutes for fleshing out the kids, but the short runtime actually made it feel more hectic and more of a necessity to finish the game. Like, I felt like they had to finish the game, otherwise it would get worse. So I think the short runtime works in its favor.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. There's so many ways they could have milked the movie and added too many extra scenes, but I agree with you. The fast pace makes you feel like you're with them, like, oh gosh, you know, what's the next thing? What's about to happen?
That is all we have to say on this episode. Thank you very much for joining me, Regent and Munsta.
A pleasure as always.
Absolutely.
And thank you, listeners, for listening. If you did enjoy this episode, remember a like, share, or review on whatever platform you are probably listening to this episode on is greatly appreciated. Also, all of our links are below, so if you want to tell us to watch a movie or TV show that you either love or hate, please do so below. Again, thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed, and we will catch you on the next episode. Thanks. Bye!